Night or good evening for joining our first quarterly crime prevention meeting, community safety meeting. And we're going to start off the meeting as we usually do by the Pledge of Allegiance. Now a quick word from our Chief of Police, Jim O'Shea.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our first quarter community safety meeting. It is a little bit after 6 p.m. on the 25th of January, 2023. As you saw last year in 2022, we had a great sort of array of speakers, a lot of different topics, and we hope to have that same lineup with regard to great topics and great speakers again during the course of this year. As of right now, we have four scheduled quarterly meetings, of course, but if the need arises for meetings in between due to any recent events or topics that the residents would like to be covered, we will go ahead and of course, host as many meetings needed to inform the public. One of the things I want to mention before we go into our great agenda this evening is that some of you heard in the news that over the past several weeks, several months, not just in the Chicagoland area, but across the country, the theft of mailbox keys or robbery of post office keys from actual postal employees. This is something where mail is being taken out of official U.S. post office mailboxes, and then checks are located within the groups of mail that are taken, and then those checks are what's referred to as washed or cleaned, and then altered, and then fraudulently cashed. And we had probably at least, if not a dozen, two dozen victims by this time, as of this evening, that fell victim to this. Last week, I just want to announce that we had a investigative mission team of our officers working the times that were affected where we believed our mailboxes were being broken into, and the officers were able to observe firsthand the mailbox over at the post office here in River Forest being broken into, mail being taken out of the box itself, and the subjects attempting to leave the area. They were, of course, caught at the scene, and as they say, red-handed with the U.S. mail. At the time they were brought into the station, U.S. Postal Office, postal inspectors were called, and from there we had a little bit of a collaboration on what force would handle and what the postal inspectors would handle. The postal inspectors are really focusing on the larger crime pattern, which is the fraudulent check cashing and the washing of checks that are coming out of their mailboxes. And they have amazing resources and are making headway and making not only good arrests, but furthering their investigations. They asked us at that time to charge the individuals with theft. They were charged with theft, felony theft, and are awaiting a trial. And you'll hear more about that in the next few weeks and with papers also. So I want to mention some good news. Hopefully that will curtail some of the activity that we've seen in River Forest. But it still seems to be not just a local or regional problem, but a national problem that the post office is facing at this time. Also, just going to hold this up right now, and eventually we will talk about this device a little bit later in the meeting. I just want to let you know this evening on our agenda, as I mentioned, we have some good organizations, some good speakers that are represented tonight. First, we're going to hear from Easter Seals and their collaboration for early childhood, and we're going to have the program manager from Easter Seals, Michelle Howell. And we're also going to have the collaboration for early childhood component from Laura Crawford, and they'll be first on the agenda tonight. That'll be filed, followed by the River Forest Library and them speaking this evening, and the library director. We're very lucky to have Emily Compton here tonight to talk to the group. And what we see also is crime prevention Ben Ransom wanting to give an update on what's going on in town and the services that we offer to the community. Commander Jim Greenwood's going to provide some information on what some of you may have seen on the news is the Safety Act, which is the state law that was passed. And there's a component of it being held up in the courts, but Commander Greenwood's going to go through the facts of the bill itself and how we're managing it here in the village of River Forest. Detective Sergeant Labriola, we're very lucky Sergeant Labriola here tonight to give us an update on some of the crime trends and statistics. And once again, as we always do, we don't leave till you're done with questions. So if you have a question, we will answer all questions. If we can't get you an answer this evening because it digs into data or some research, we will get your information and respond to you in a timely manner tomorrow. But all questions that the public has, we will answer. Just lastly, a lot of you are out there watching tonight in the comfort of your homes or businesses or other places, and it's great to see you out there. And we do have a live audience, so always remember, you're welcome to come into the Village Hall here, and participate and watch live, as well as on the internet. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce the Easter Seals Program Manager, Michelle Howell, and she'll be speaking tonight with Laura Crawford, and we'll get their presentation started now.
Great, thank you.
If you guys want to take over, share your screen, presentation.
Yeah, we have some slides that Michelle and I will speak to. Just a moment, I'll share my screen. How's that? Can you see one
yep.
slide? Okay, great. Thank you for that introduction, Chief. My name is Laura Crawford. I'm the Interim Executive Director for the Collaboration for Early Childhood, which is based in Oak Park, but we serve families from River Forest and Oak Park. And increasingly, we are starting to serve families in our neighboring communities, kind of on the western suburbs. So I wanted to frame our talk tonight around two key points, which the first of which is that 90% of a person's brain is fully developed before they even enter kindergarten. So that's 90%, which means that these early years are the most productive time for making the neural connections that will carry a person forward for their entire lives. And this time of brain development is crucial for a person's emotional well-being, social competence, and cognitive ability. And what happens in the first 5 years of life will last a lifetime. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The other is that developing children need a strong community of caring and support. And really, that's what helps build their brains. It's their relationships with people that are so important. Relationships with the people in their homes, at their preschool programs, anyone who cares for them. It also means that we as a whole community should support children as a home and that we're as a whole and that we're all part of a web of support for young children. And the foundation for all future learning is built during early childhood. And the brain is one of the only organs that's not fully developed at birth. We've learned a lot about brain research in the last 20 or so years. And another thing to keep in mind is that brain development is a dynamic, interactive process. It's not predetermined. And experiences that happen early in birth, while they're very crucial, because the brain continues to grow, they are able to change later on in life. So It's important to build a strong foundation in the first 2,000 days. That's about 5.5 years, right around the time a child enters kindergarten. And as essential as they are, we're not born with the skills that enable us to control impulses, make plans, and stay focused. We're born with the potential to develop those capabilities. And that's through good things like good health, strong families, and quality learning experiences. And that's where we come in. So the Collaboration for Early Childhood is a community-driven organization that cultivates the development of the whole child from birth to age 5 by engaging families, local organizations, early childhood educators, caregivers, and health providers to create an equitable, nurturing, and interconnected system of support. And as an organization, the Collaboration for Early Childhood builds the connections for our community to support young children. So we bring partners together towards a common goal of ensuring that children have what they need to thrive. So we do that through the lens known as collective impact, which is a place-based approach to achieving strong outcomes for communities, recognizing the unique strengths, opportunities, and challenges in each place. It acknowledges that it takes everyone to do the work. And we bring together many partners to benefit young children and their families. So we partner with social service organizations, the libraries like River Force Library, WonderWorks Children's Museum, Oak Leiden, Developmental Services, and many others. So Easter Seals is one of our primary partners, and Easter Seals provides home visiting services, and Michelle will talk more about that in a moment. And our work breaks across 4 key program service areas, community engagement, family engagement, health and development, and early learning. And we engage the entire community in the access of our children. So we leverage resources from other agencies to support children and families on their journey to kindergarten. We don't do all of that work directly ourselves. The first thing we do is identify where a need is and locate an organization or an agency in the community who might do that work, or identify gaps and try to make that happen. So our family engagement program offers an array of opportunities for parents to connect with each other, to grow, to access resources so that they can be their child's first and most important teachers. We have a lot of parent workshops, and I think Michelle might mention those in a moment. Health and development is one of our other areas of support. We work to ensure that children birth to age 5 receive periodic developmental screenings and vision and hearing screenings. And we try to make sure that all children who need assessment and referrals get those assessments and referrals. We work in areas of teacher quality. So we want to make sure that early learning programs, preschools, childcare programs are high quality. So we train teachers. We provide in-classroom consultation. And we provide professional development to promote successful early learning classroom experience for all children. One of our signature events is an annual early childhood symposium that's actually happening on February 25th. And we're glad to say that we'll be back in person. That's at Percy Julian Middle School on Ridgeland in Oak Park. So if you know any preschool teachers or people in childcare, please tell them about our symposium. It is very low cost, and it's a one day where they can get a lot of credits that they need towards their certifications. So as I mentioned, Easter Seals is one of our major partners for home visiting and more recently for coordinated intake services, which Michelle will talk more about. We actually, our organizations have adjoining office spaces at 171 South Oak Park Avenue in Oak Park. That's right across from Maya del Sol, down the street from George's. So we're really well situated. With that, I'll hand it over to you, Michelle.
Thanks, Laura. As Laura mentioned, so we, in the fall, we just started doing coordinated intake. So this slide is called Ask Lenita. Lenita is our intake coordinator for the Collaboration and Easter Seals. And she is available for questions about anything listed on the screen. So she does the preschool for all screenings. She can help with information if a family calls in about child development. She takes care of, the collaboration offers free baby bundles for families who are expecting or have a child under the age of 1. So Lenita coordinates pickup of those with families. She makes, can help link families to early intervention services if they need help with that, if they don't know which early intervention is theirs based on their zip code. So we've been asking, really trying to make sure that people know about Lenita and her role, because she is really available for anybody. So if a parent has a question, we would, you know, encourage them to call or email her. The number is listed and the email address listed. If it's a community member who has a question and they just really don't know what the next step is, Lenita can help with that. She really is just a resource for early childhood services in River Forest and the surrounding areas. We want to make sure that people know that she is available, and she is, you know, working hard to make sure that there aren't gaps in services. And if people don't know the next step of where to find something that they need, that Lenita is positioned to be able to help them get connected to really anything that they need. And she actually does get calls from Chicago too. So really, she is, if you don't know where to go, Lenita is a good place to start. And then I just wanted to mention a few things about Easter sales ourselves. So as Laura mentioned, we have adjoining offices in Oak Park. But we have other programs that, ours is a home visiting program that I'll talk about next, but some of the other relevant Easter sales services I listed on the slide. So we have three Easter sales academies, which are located in Chicago, Tinley Park and McChesney Park. The Illinois Autism Partnership I thought was relevant because it partners with places like school districts, schools, fire departments, police departments to provide programming for individuals with an autism spectrum disorder or other related disabilities. So they'll train police department staff, fire department staff, any school staff on working with children with autism, how to respond to them. They come to schools and help set up spaces so that they're more accessible for children with autism and disabilities, and they're available to partner with anyone throughout the state. Harry's Buttons is it's for individuals with autism, other disabilities. They are in they produce buttons, magnets and apparel. So they make like all of our Easter sales t-shirts and polos, but it's job training basically for individuals with disabilities. So they do that again throughout the state. If you need those kinds of things, Harry's Buttons is a great opportunity to help teach those adults how to do, you know, some of those life skills and to kind of run a business. And then the last thing I'll talk about is partnering with parents. So partnering with parents is our home visiting program. It's a free parent support program for prenatal moms and families with children 0 to 5 who live in River Forest or Oak Park. And what families get, it's a free program that's individualized really to what the family needs. So every family gets paired with a parent educator. They receive monthly or bi-monthly visits. Those can be in their home. They can be a community location. So sometimes we'll go to WonderWorks. We can go to the library for those. Or they can be virtual. So we've learned since COVID, that's been a change that's been just enacted in all home visiting programs, is if a family is not comfortable with someone in their home yet, or if their availability is limited, we can do virtual visits with them through Zoom as well. We do family groups and socialization opportunities. So what we found in the last few years really is that families just, they lack a lot of that socialization that they got prior to COVID. They don't really know how to get back into that or how to meet families with children the same age. So we connect families that way. Education and resources around discipline, health, nutrition, safety, sleep, routines, transitions, and attachments. So we really just meet a family where they're at with these topics, and we want to make sure that they feel supported in what's the best decision for their family based on their resources and their needs to make sure that their children are getting the support that they need at home, and making sure that parents are getting the support and caregivers too. It's we use a strength-based approach. So we really just want to make sure, as Laura said, that the parents do realize that they're a child's first and most important teacher, and that they feel empowered to advocate for their child, that they feel empowered to make decisions for their child, the hard decisions for them. We also provide support around potty training, breastfeeding, starting solids, starting preschool and kindergarten, which has become increasingly important in the last few years, because many times now children may be starting preschool or kindergarten and haven't been exposed to any other early learning opportunities because of COVID. And then in every home visit, we provide a developmentally appropriate activity to support the development of the whole child. So those activities can be language activities, they can be motor activities, social emotional activities as well. So we just want to make sure that we're meeting the child where they're at, and we're helping, you know, strengthen their strengths and lift up anything that might need a little bit of extra support. And we do annual developmental screenings with all of our children. But the other piece is connection to community resource. So a lot of what Lenita does for the community, we do on the individual level with families. So if they say to us, like mental health supports have been really important for families, parents and caregivers and children alike. So we just want to make sure that if it's not something that we can provide in-house, that we make sure that we're getting them that support as well. In addition to these things, we do a program called Chicago Parent Program, which is a 12-week parenting skill program. We offer those a few times a year. We try to really make sure that they're being offered on a family schedule. So right now we're running one on Thursday evenings. We've run them on Saturday mornings sometimes too. And those are for families with 2 to 5 year olds to learn some skills and really to be able to talk to other parents about what's worked in their households and what hasn't. And I really just want to make sure home visiting is one of those hard things for people to understand. I mean, if you've never seen a home visit, it's hard to understand what we're doing with a family and who might qualify. So we just ask because we have Lenita, if you think of if there's ever a family or an individual, you're like, they could use this extra support. It's Lenita's job to help, you know, a family determine what level of support we can provide them. So if someone is referred to us or someone is directed to Lenita, she's going to work with them to know, is home visiting right for your family? Is it just that you need connection to other resources? Is it that you really just need to be connected to the collaboration and the workshops that they provide? So it's a hard, we like to make the determination if a family qualifies for something. So if a family is connected to us, we're going to do whatever we can to make sure that they're getting the best fit for their family and what their family needs are.
And this is one of the main resources on our website, which is collab4kids.org, collab and then the number 4kids.org. It is a great place to send all the new family that just moved into your block that might have young kids, and they're going to ask you, hey, do you know anywhere that I can bring my child during the day? Maybe it's a home daycare program they're looking for. Maybe it's a center based program. Maybe it's half day. Maybe it's full day. Maybe they don't know. They need a map of where things are based on transportation. You can tell them to go to collabforkids.org and look at the resource directory, and they can filter through and find a program that might be right for them. And then I think the last resource we want to leave you with is Lenita's phone number and email address, which is 708-613-6122. She's at extension 8, or her email is ci@easterseals.chicago.org. And I think that's it. Michelle, did you have anything else?
No, thank you again for letting us speak tonight. We appreciate being able to share what we do with all of you.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to have you guys here. And I look forward to partnering with our Youth Network Council, which is where I heard about Easter Seals. And so look forward to continued partnership and collaboration. So thank you for that. And next, we'll turn this over to Emily Compton, the director of the River Forest Public Library. Emily, always good to have you join us. Thank you for being here and look forward to hearing about your great services.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? All right, good. Thank you for asking me to represent the library at your quarterly safety meeting. I do have some slides, so I will share my screen. Okay, so we pride ourselves on offering something for everyone at the library, and we feel that the library provides these in a safe space, just to make it topical for the evening. But I do appreciate being able to share a few highlights of the things that are coming up in the coming months at the library. And I wanted to first start by talking about the library as a place for learning, and I, of course, want to start by talking about books and reading. We are still and will always be a book place, including having cozy spaces to read. As you can see, this gentleman on the right is reading by one of our very cozy fireplaces. Today would be a perfect day to sit by the fireplace and read a book. And he might be reading a book from our new classics collection. We've had a number of people ask if we could pull out all of the classics and put it in its own browsable collection. So we've done that. If you're looking for some Jane Austen, you might find her there. The library staff also encourage a healthy competition when it comes to reading. It's important to us, so we like to compete. I hope that you're aware of our summer reading program. That's really our biggest program of the year. We have a huge kickoff celebration at the end of the school year to celebrate the beginning of summer, the end of school, the beginning of summer reading. We had over 700 people at our kickoff last summer, so it's a big deal. But we also have a winter reading challenge. We like to compete all year long. So the winter reading challenge is going on right now. It's not too late to join. It goes through February. So if you'd like to maybe win a prize, you can join that program now. The library also offers a wide range of technology. And unfortunately, we do not have a robot at this time, although, you know, we might in the future. But we do have an extensive ebook and streaming collection. We have computers, copiers, scanners, a fax machine in the library for people to use. We also have technology available for checkout. And I've listed a few of those things on this slide, from mobile hotspots, which I myself have used when my internet is out. They work really well. You can get many devices on a hotspot, to a mini projector, to Wonder Books. And Wonder Books are a book that have an audiobook built in, so they help kids learn to read by reading with them. And we also have events and programs that offer enrichment for all ages. So this lifelong learning idea. And I'll tell you about just a few that are coming up. The week of February 20th is National Engineering Week. And our children's department has planned daily after school building challenges for kids, tweens, and teens. So every day after school, the kids can come to the library and go to the children's room and practice their STEM skills with the building challenge. On February 26th, we're having an Unfinished Journey, African American Music in its Pivotal Decades. And we'll have musician, historian, and radio personality Clarence Goodman, who will perform and discuss songs from pivotal moments in African American history, from slavery, Jim Crow, the civil rights movement, and beyond. And that will be live in the library in our Barbara Hall meeting room that's just off the lobby there. And we do still have virtual events, if you prefer virtual events. And this is just one of them that's coming up on March 1st, a virtual event live with Mary Roach, the New York Times bestselling author of such titles as Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers, Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife, and Packing for Mars, The Curious Science of Life in the Void. And Roach will discuss her frank approach to science and the importance of humor when exploring the weird, wonderful world in which we live. And while it is a virtual event, she is going to be there live, and which is very exciting, I think, for us, we think so. So we have a variety of types and opportunities for learning. And next, I wanted to talk about the library as a place for connection. We here at the library like to think of the library as a community hub, a place where people can meet up with friends and can also meet new friends. We are in the heart of River Forest, as you know, and we offer space for people to just gather and have a nice time. We think that's important. The photo on the left here is from local favorites, the Dooley Band. We have a concert with them in the fall, and the concert is a tradition we hope to keep going just as long as they'll let us, as long as they're up for it. We'll have the Dooleys there in the fall. And in the second photo, you'll see a group of students doing some work together after school. We love seeing the kids in the library after school and otherwise really anytime, unless they're supposed to be in school, and they should be in school. And we're really happy to offer a safe gathering space for them. And we also offer opportunities for connection through play. And I've included some examples here. So first, I want to talk briefly about guesstimation jars. This doesn't sound like it would be a big deal. People really love them. We switch them out every month. And we have one for kids, one for teens, and one for adults. And it's exactly what you think it is. It's a jar full of stuff. And you guess how many of it are inside. And if you're the closest, you win the contents of the jar. And I love this because it's just as popular with the adults as it is with the kids. And we have so many fun conversations with everyone about these jars. Like, people go crazy about them. Next, I wanted to mention our play area in the children's room. If you've been to the library after story time or after school, you'll notice a very busy play area. The children's department offers a variety of activities and toys for kids to play with, including a new dollhouse, which you'll see here in this picture, which was a gift from the River Forest Public Library Foundation. And if you don't know about the foundation, they raise awareness about the library, and then they also raise money for the library. And they've funded many wonderful things at the library, from self-check machines to storytime supplies to a very generous grant for a construction project that I'll talk about in a minute. And then we also, of course, offer programs that are just fun. So I have a couple of those here. Two upcoming events are this February's Stuffed Animal Sleepover Party, where kids drop off their favorite stuffed animal for a fun sleepover party with the children's room mascots, S'more and Gelato. It's a stuffed cat and dog. And then the kids come back in the morning to collect their animals and pictures from the wild sleepover party that they had at the library. They really like it. It's very cute. And then on April 30th, we're having a family escape room, and there are still spots open for this, where families will solve puzzles to try to escape before it's too late. Now, you know, what happens if it's too late? Nobody has told me this, so you'll just have to come and find out. And then lastly, I wanted to talk about the library as a place for inspiration. And on this slide, I have a handful of programs that are coming up that are meant to spark creativity. Starting with February 9th, we have zine making for teens and tweens. And the library, along with Quimby's bookstore, will teach the kids about the history of zine making and then teach them how to make their own. In February and March, we're hosting a short story contest for adults and teens who can submit an original story with a chance to win a fabulous prize and also have their story published on the library's website. And stories are due March 31st if you're a creative writer and want to submit one. And then we have two programs on the same day that I wanted to mention. The first is Poems for Pancakes, and that's for teens and tweens who read or recite a poem will receive a piping hot pancake that will be made as the reading poem. April is Poetry Month, in case you didn't know that. We appreciate your poetry. And then Paint and Sip is for adults and seniors, and it's a guided experience to paint your own masterpiece, and no experience is required. And they will be sipping on soft drinks, not wine, unfortunately, but it'll still be a good time. And then the library board and staff are feeling inspired in other ways, and I'll talk about two of those. If you've visited the library lately, you may have noticed a construction project outside. That's to Centennial Park. What we're doing is we've built an enclosure, that part's done, for a new air handler, which is going to be delivered this spring. And then once that HVAC equipment is hooked up, we can remodel the interior mechanical room and do a second multi-purpose room for programs and meetings, because right now we just have one. So we're really excited and already thinking of new ways we can use that space. And then finally, we're also working on our strategic plan. We've been working on it since last year. We had a community survey, focus groups, we had board and staff retreats, and then we presented the first draft of the strategic plan at our January regular board meeting. So we are well on our way to revealing the complete plan this coming spring at the beginning of our fiscal year in May. And the staff and board have a lot of wonderful ideas about how the library can continue to be a place for learning and connection and inspiration. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Emily. So for all of our guest presenters, thank you for being here tonight. We haven't had any questions come through at this time. So if you needed to hop off to continue doing your work, you're welcome to stick around or to hop off. Thank you for being here. And if any other questions come up, I can forward them to you, or they can contact me at our police department. And I'll thank you all for being here. And at this time, we'll move to the River Forest Police portion of our presentation. Okay. So a quick reminder for any information on what's coming up in town, you can go to www.vrf.us, click on the link up at the top where it says Get E-News or Get News, and you can sign up for our village newsletter. Everything that comes out of the police department and local communities that we advertise online will come through here, as well as our village Facebook page. A reminder of the different services that we provide. We have the Emergency ID Bracelet Program, which we signed up 2 new applicants in the past couple weeks. So that program is continuing to grow. We've also had several departments from Illinois and from other states contact our department about what we're doing with this program and looking to roll out their own. So we've been able to connect with them and kind of consult them on how to start the program. So it's been a very positive program. I'm thankful for that. Some of the other things you have see up listed up there, I won't read them all out to you, but we do our summer Junior Citizens Police Academy. We will be starting to accept names for an interest list, or we are accepting names for interest lists. You can email me at bransom@vrf.us. And we have the Vacation Watch program going on. Child safety seat inspections are always available. Call to make an appointment. And I will just hit on briefly on our residential security surveys, which we offer for free as well. So these surveys can be scheduled with our crime prevention office. You can call, it's not an emergency number, and get connected with an officer or sergeant from the crime prevention office to set up your survey. And what we do is we do free checks, make sure that your perimeter and interior and exterior are prepared and ready to that the residents will make recommendations on actions that you can take to mitigate security risks. So, for instance, perimeter, is your fence operational? Is it in good condition? Landscaping, is there landscaping that provides opportunities for someone to conceal themselves or gain access to your home? We look at exterior lighting, particularly illumination of your street, your house numbers. Talk about proximity sensor lights and other things that can be deterrents. Alarm systems, is your alarm system operable? Do you have the right sensors in place that are meeting the specific needs of your house? Exteriors, doors and windows. Locking mechanisms, are they safe? Do they provide any opportunities for an intruder to gain access? We also take a look at garages, talk about service doors and security measures for your cars, whether they're in a garage or not. And then alternatives to surveillance systems, doorbell cameras, and that kind of thing. And any more, and we just answer questions and kind of work with you to provide the best service that we can and make the best recommendations that we can. So again, that is free. You can contact us to make an appointment. In 2019, the Township Youth and Family Services hosted a marijuana legalization panel, which consisted of police personnel from River Forest Police and Oak Park Police Departments, community activists, healthcare professionals, and even Senator Kimberly Lightford was there on the panel to discuss the implications of the pending legalization of marijuana in Illinois. Now, obviously, a few years removed, we tentatively plan to host another panel. Well, we're not hosting it, but the township is. Tentatively on February 9th at Brooks Middle School, where we will be discussing where we stand on the issue now, what obstacles we've encountered, and what we see moving forward. For more information on this, you can contact the Oak Park Township at oakparktownship.org. And as the Chief O'Shea teased, a quick message about a new program.
Thank you, Officer Ransom. We have some breaking news this evening, some excitement in the village. Once again, we're always looking for ways to keep the residents safe and also prevent crimes from occurring within the village. We've been working over the past several months with Hyundai USA to try to curtail the thefts that have been occurring, and it's a nationwide problem. And I'm sure you heard about it in the news with the ability to steal Kia and Hyundai models primarily between the years of 2010 and 2021. But working and partnering with Hyundai, we were able to secure a donation from Hyundai of a little bit over 100 locking devices, steering wheel locking devices. And we are going to be offering them starting next week, and you'll see the announcement come out soon. We'll be offering these devices free to residents that have some of the affected models. Specifically at this time, there will be Hyundai models between 2010 and 2021. You'll need to be a River Forest resident and be able to provide identification with regard to your residency in the village here. You'll also need to have a current River Forest vehicle sticker on your car. And once again, that will be verified by an officer once you come into the station. We will be distributing these free devices until we are depleted. And we hope to get some more. But they will be free to the public. We're not charging anything for these devices. And once again, they were a donation in partnership with Hyundai USA. And you'll see some contact information on who the primary contact will be. And one of those primary contacts will be Officer Ben Ransom, our crime prevention officer. This is a phenomenon that I don't think anyone thought would reach the level that it was or that it still is, but we're hoping to sort of curtail that. And you've seen a couple other Illinois communities, such as Skokie, Evanston, Alsup, just to mention a couple, that also have been able to partner with Hyundai, and they've seen some success. Once again, this will not eliminate the problem, but hopefully create a calming effect, slowing it down with regard to people having their vehicles stolen. We would always say, if you see something or hear something, please say something. And don't be afraid to call 911. The sound of a cutting device at 3 a.m. may not be a normal sound, and it may just elicit you to call 911. At 12 noon, if you see some individuals maybe under a car and they're coming up with a large chunk of the car, getting into a vehicle and driving away, that once again is another clue that maybe there's been some illegal activity that has just occurred. Please call 911. Really, it takes a whole village to look out for itself, and we have great residents in town. Please continue to make those calls, and let's help really eliminate this problem as best we can from the village of River Forest. Thank you on that.
All right. Thank you, Chief. Moving right along, we have a word from Detective Sergeant Justin Labriola on behalf of the River Forest Police Detectives Unit. Good evening, everybody. Thank you again for attending this meeting, both in person and here. The chief did discuss one crime trend that we've seen recently, and that has been the increase in mail thefts. There has been multiple reports on the news about postal carriers getting robbed, or folks that were actually just obtaining fraudulent keys or the keys themselves from the United States. In effect, set up an operation jointly with the Postal Inspector. We did apprehend two individuals. My suggestion is, for the time being, although I won't get into any specifics about the investigation, if you do have time permitted, I would not use the outside mailbox at 401 William, the River Forest Post Office. If you can, actually just drop the envelopes that you're mail out in person, so actually go inside the post office and drop those off, or temporarily use another location. What we've been seeing is that some of these keys are actually utilized for just local areas, meaning open up all the boxes in Oak Park and River Forest.
Barrington, they just may open up Barrington, but you have to imagine that the whole city of Chicago, a lot of them, they're using the city. So that's becoming very lucrative. And starting to see recently. Obviously, we have discussed those too. I'm changing topics here from the Hyundais and the Kias. Fortunately, over the last couple of months, we've seen a decrease in those, although we are going to be providing these wheel locks, which I think are a great tool. That was a very nice gesture on behalf of Hyundai and the Village of River Forest, combining with them to get these out to some of our residents. I think that that will definitely be useful. Catalytic converters, we've had a deal with that, although we're still very active in monitoring the area. A lot of our local businesses and parking garages. So those continue to be the trends where we're at right now. Fortunately, it was, in my 18-year career, probably the most quiet year that we had for package thefts. I don't know if we had too many, which are being more aware of when their packages are being delivered. It was a good winter. We're at exactly where we want to be. Crime is down here in River Forest. I think both Part 1 and Part 2 crimes are decreasing, which is always a positive note. We will be approaching spring, and when we do, hopefully sooner than later with the warm weather, obviously we're going to start to get into bikes, parks, things like that, where crime tends to be areas. So hopefully during our next meeting, we'll discuss some of those areas and have our bike registration. I know Ben Ransom, he always talks about that and make sure that. But right now, our crime is down. We really haven't seen too many specific trends. But again, if you do, like myself, my number is on the village website, so you can contact myself directly if you have any questions or if there are any concerns that we could discuss either privately or if you see a trend. I'd be more than happy to listen. And again, we safe 2023. Although it's just started, we're on good pace. You all for attending, not only in person, but via the social.
Thank you, Detective Sergeant. I forgot to advance the slide, but our last thing on our agenda before we get to questions is a brief presentation about the Safety Act by Patrol Commander Jim Greenwood.
Evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us here in the audience as well. I'm just going to give a brief overview. I presented this with the Village Board back on January 6th and was asked to by the chief to revisit the information during the community safety meeting so that folks that didn't have a chance to tune in to the that public meeting had an opportunity to hear the information again. What is the Safety Act? In 2021, the Illinois Safety Act was brought into law and enacted extensive reform impacting many areas of the criminal justice system, including pre-arrest diversion, policing, pre-trial sentencing actions. Some of the main things that occurred immediately with the act when it was signed in to law was it expanded officer training on topics including crisis intervention, de-escalation, use of force, high-risk traffic stops, implicit bias, racial and ethnic sensitivity training, and emergency response. These are all topics and items that we had been training on previously. This just made a statewide standardized format that all of police agencies should still be training in or are mandated to train in. Like I said, the River Forest Police Department, we've been training on these things. It also expanded the use of and changes in guidelines and requirements for body-worn cameras and who can access, review, or delete the footage from those systems. The Safety Act also offered new standards for when police use force. It requires officers to provide aid after using force. Some of the other aspects of the law that were enacted were dealing with complaints and misconduct of officers. One big thing that that was enacted and we had already been training on, and our policies were updated in order to make certain that we were in compliance with state law and with federal law, is that officers are required to intervene if they see another officer using unauthorized force or excessive force, and to report it. It's not just, see something, say nothing. An opportunity and a mandate for officers to share if they've seen something that's been done wrong. Our agency was fortunate enough in this past year to partner with the Georgetown University in the Active Bystandership for Law Enforcement, also known as the ABLE program. At this time, our officers, half the department is trained, and by the middle of February, all officers will be trained at our department. And what this is it gives people the tools to and the training on how to recognize misconduct, how to report it properly, and how to navigate that what can be a difficult landscape in any workplace. Safety Act also expanded on crime statistic reporting to a monthly format, allows for medical treatment for people in custody without unreasonable delay. Again, that just made it a statewide mandate, something that we've done here at the River Forest Police Department for as long as I can remember and anybody else can remember. Also mandated the use of force reporting to the FBI through a national use of force database. Safety Act, as far as policing goes, also allows the Attorney General, gave the Attorney General's office power to investigate or initiate lawsuits and enforce settlements against police agencies that have shown a pattern of depriving individuals of their rights. Also, Safety Act, and this was all immediate in July of 2021, established monthly reporting of officers responding to mental health crises to the Illinois State Police. Going further, the Safety Act also created a statewide decertification process for officers. So if there was an incident of misconduct or complaints against officers, there was an avenue and a reporting mechanism that was put in place that, again, was mostly done locally at each department. This gave a statewide process and channel for everything to go through. The Safety Act also allowed for investigation of anonymous complaints against officers and allowed complaint filing against officers without sworn affidavits or legal documentation at the time of reporting. Part of the process also enacted was notification of police misconduct to the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board. That is the government entity or the board that follows mandates and makes certain that officers are doing their training, not only training, but making sure that they're within policy and procedure for the state or within state law, and then also following up and making certain that the agencies are reporting the information. As said in the next section here, it requires a publicly available database for any police misconduct that results in decertification that's managed by the board. Along with, there were changes to the Illinois State Police Merit Board composition and reporting to the board, and that mainly affects the Illinois State Police, but that is another component of the act, or what is now the law. Creates the Illinois Law Enforcement Certification Review Panel, which is made up of law enforcement professionals and other people, stakeholders in the industry and from government that have an interest in making certain that certification and decertification processes are being followed and adhered to. The Safety Act also enhanced automatic and discretionary termination of officers where there were some incidents or types of incidents rather in the past pre-Safety Act where there was not a recourse for automatic or discretionary termination. The act allowed that for egregious and obvious violations of law or policy. Safety Act also changed procedures for automatic and discretionary decertification of officers, as I just stated, includes provisions for immediate suspensions, again, for egregious or obvious violations of law and policy, and requires verification of training and employment information. That's something that we do here locally and then is also reported to the state. Some of the other provisions of the Safety Act that went in, again, this is something that rolled out over several years, started in 01 and has rolled through up until January 1st of this year. In January of 2022, people in custody that had been arrested or detained that were brought into the police department were allowed 3 phone calls in 3 hours, and every person that's brought into the station is given that notification upon their entry into our detention area. Also provides for a confidential mental health screening and counseling for officers. This basically mandates that officers also receive mental health screening and debriefings and tools and counseling if they're going through times that it may be difficult based on things they've seen or experienced while being an officer in traumatic situations or other situations that may have caused some mental health issues that need to be addressed. Some new training requirements that were put into the act also for probationary officers, again, things that we've been training on here in River Forest for ever, I can safely say that, is the crisis intervention team, training, scenario-based training, use of force, and high-risk traffic stops. Some of them, and of those 4, obviously scenario-based training, just like any training other than a real incident, those are some of the best training tools that we can give to our people, and we've been doing simulated live fire training or simulated video training for de-escalation and other training tools for a very long time. This, again, just mandated it statewide. And then there was more training that was part of the act, and it requires a minimum of 30 hours of in-service training for every officer in the state for every 3 years in the following topics, including constitutional and proper use of law enforcement authority, procedural justice, civil rights, human rights, reporting child abuse and neglect, and cultural competency, including implicit bias, awareness, and cultural sensitivity. Again, going to the scenario-based role-playing, this mandates that at least 12 of the hours of training are scenario-based training, as I discussed, that are some of the most important training tools that you can have really in any job, but specifically with law enforcement, with the dynamic situations that we experience and encounter on a daily basis. At least 6 of the hours in the scenario-based training are focused on use of force, including de-escalation techniques, and also specific training on law concerning stops, seizures, and the use of force. I almost said gave it up with the use of force, or the use of the Fourth Amendment. Specific training on officer safety techniques, including cover, concealment, and time, giving an officer opportunity to learn tools that might help them from having to escalate a situation, essentially, by providing themselves with those 3 items, cover, concealment, and time, and at least 6 hours in those 3 years on high-risk traffic stops. Now, this part of the law was the most currently discussed and media covered portion of the law, which is the abolishment of cash bail. As some of you or all of you may know, this is a portion of the law that is still going to be decided by the Illinois State Supreme Court. That portion of the law is going to be heard by the Supreme Court. As of now, it's tentatively scheduled for March of this year, which, with it being a Supreme Court case, is actually a very quick timeline. Most Supreme Court cases might be several years before they're heard once they're brought to the court. Other portions of the Safety Act and Pretrial Fairness Act include preventing the results of risk assessment from being the sole basis for a detention decision. It adds notification of pretrial hearings to crime victims. So not only is it where the defendant or the officers know when the court case or the first sentences or the first hearings are going to be, but the victim, as we've done for years, is also going to be allowed to have that information and should have that information. The Safety Act and Pretrial Fairness Act also changed the pretrial release procedures, including these were some of the big changes. Rather than officers bringing people in for every infraction, from minor infractions up to very serious infractions, some of the more minor infractions that I'll discuss are going to be able to be addressed by officers on the street directly with the offender or the person that may have made a mistake or is the subject of the citation. But there are still plenty of, and as I'll discuss, different crimes and misdemeanors that people commit that they will still be mandated to come into the police department or be held on bond. As I just foreshadowed, the Class B and Class C misdemeanors, which are lower misdemeanors in Illinois, the violator will be given a citation and notice and released on the scene, rather than some of the more minor crimes such as disorderly conduct or a criminal trespass or panhandling or a state violation of something along those lines, soliciting without a permit. So a lot of these things we already have codified in village ordinance. This just allowed us to include more of those violations as part of state law, where a person doesn't have to be brought in the station, fingerprinted, photographed, and post a bond. Now they'll be identified on the scene and provided a court date and given a citation with the same information as they would have if the incident was something that is reported, as we have here, a Class A misdemeanor, which are your higher misdemeanors. Those people will still have to be brought into the station, fingerprinted, photographed, identified prior to release. However, those people then will also be getting the same or similar paperwork to somebody on the street, where they'll be given the citation and the notice to respond to court on a given date and time and a copy of the complaint against them. So it's really just a change in procedure, not as much a change in a lot of what has been reported or has been, I can't say misreported, there's different viewpoints on this, but it does eliminate cash bail for a lot of the Class A misdemeanors, if not all of them. There are exceptions to this. All felonies are brought into the station, especially violent felonies, and I'll cover that in a little bit here. And also, if a person poses a real and present danger and is to the safety of the public or themselves, still able to be brought into the station, and a state's attorney or a judge can hear the facts of the case, and if it's something that needs to be reviewed by the state's attorney's office and can be articulated by an officer, that person can still be held in custody. Non-probational felonies, which I'll cover here in a minute, those people will still come into the station. Forcible felonies, and again, those are our higher crimes, which I'll talk about next. And also stalking and aggravated stalking charges and domestic battery charges. Those folks are domestic-related cases will still be brought into the station, fingerprinted, photographed, and more often held in custody until they see a judge, and the judge determines what their status is going to be pre-trial. If it will be electronic monitoring, just a promise to comply and return to court, or if they'll be held in custody. Again, as I said, violations of domestic battery, those are included. Most sex offenses, excluding the ones listed here, such as prostitution, which is, I believe, a Class A misdemeanor, and some of the other ones listed here, again, are Class A misdemeanors. Other than that, the sex offenses, which are the more serious cases, are still held in custody, and people that will be coming into the station. Any case involving firearms, human trafficking, child abduction, hate crime, threatening a public official, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, those folks, they're still coming to the station. They're still getting charged and arrested and still going over to court. violations of the Humane Care for Animals Act and aggravated DUI offenses will still be held and brought in and sent over to court. And again, similar to what I spoke about earlier, if somebody's in a high risk or more likely to hurt themselves, and including a person that is a high likelihood of fleeing, somebody that a judge can say or we can articulate or the prosecutors can articulate is a high flight risk, that person can still be held in the court, in jail, rather. Some of the forcible felonies, as you can see here listed, I'm not going to read through the whole list. There are more serious, the most serious charges and crimes that people can commit. It's not an all-inclusive list, as it says at the bottom there. Any felony involving violence or threat of violence is somebody that would be brought into court and appear before a judge for the judge to determine what their pretrial status will be. And just in the interest of explanation, on some of this slide, you'll see CSA, CSA, and that was in interest of fitting everything on a slide. And CSA stands for criminal sexual assault. So any sexual assault incident or crime would still be something where a person's going to be brought before a judge for the determination of pretrial status. At that point, I have covered my topic, and I appreciate everybody's time. And stay safe. And again, if you have any questions, please feel free to contact any of us here at the police department. And again, my information is available online. I'm going to turn this over to Officer Ben Ransom.
Excellent. Before we close, I did just want to see if we had any questions from the audience. No, we're good. And don't have any Q&A in the poll. So with that, thank you for that. Thank you, Commander Greenwood. That was a lot of information, but if you've seen the Safety Act, it's over 700 pages, so it was a pretty good condensed version. So thank you for that important information. With that, my name is Ben Ransom. You can contact us, the Crime Prevention Unit, at bransom@vrf.us with any further questions or inquiries. And thank you for joining us tonight. Have a great, safe night, and we'll see you at the next meeting in April.